Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Addiction, Attachment, Trauma, and Recovery. The Power of Connection. By Oliver J. Morgan. Foreword by Louis Cozzolino. Narrated by James Anderson Foster. In my life, families have arisen when I needed them. The Society of Jesus, Jesuits, when I was 17. Alcoholics Anonymous in my mid-30s, Ellen and the kids in my 50s and beyond. Thank you. Foreword. We are past a time in the mental health profession when simple solutions and strategies are satisfactory in any specialty area, especially addiction and recovery. Therapists and clients live within a society which influences us in every possible manner. None of us doubt that the long-standing addiction epidemic in the inner cities is related to cultural and economic marginalization and prejudice. It is just as clear that the current epidemic of addiction among people in suburban and rural communities is associated with the painful transition from industrial to technology-based economies. Addiction is not just a diagnosis, it's a symptom of something bigger. The emergence of social neuroscience in the 1970s started the exploration of the brain as a social organ. We have discovered that our brains consist of a government of systems which are interwoven, integrated, and shaped during development through experience-dependent processes. And like our brains, we too live in a government of relationships which trigger our genetic expression, build our neural circuitry, and modulate our biochemistry. Over the last 20 years, those of us who work in the area of interpersonal neurobiology, IPNB, have explored these and many other fields of scientific study to try and make sense of the vast complexity of human behavior and experience. 2 decades into the 21st century, we need clinician theorists who are capable of multidisciplinary integration, synergistic thinking, and therapeutic sophistication. Enter Oliver Morgan. Combining his decades of clinical experience with an array of new findings and insights, Dr. Morgan expands the fields of interpersonal neurobiology and social ecology into the treatment of addiction. He does not shy away in the face of complexity. Rather, he embraces it in a very human and understandable manner. In his openness about his personal struggles with addiction, he provides us with a living window to the thoughts, feelings, and struggles that all need to be addressed for successful treatment. Each belief about addiction, from it being a medical disease to a failure of character to an individual choice, lacks a coherent understanding of the heterogeneity and complexity of human experience and addiction. Each perspective may be relevant, but certainly not to the exclusion of the others. From the perspective of IPNB, experience is a consequence of our genetic history. Epigenetic processes of gene expression, the history of our social relationships, the quality of our connections with others, and our ability to both connect to the group mind and contribute to our tribe. These and many other human processes lead to the experience of an individual who either builds a generative life or participates in its destruction. Dr. Morgan focuses on an important aspect of addiction, an estrangement from the group mind and feeling disconnected from others, making addiction a symptom of the pain of loneliness and separation. He is on to something very important. In the following book, Dr. Morgan will explore the relationship between the brain, attachment, and trauma to learn about their central role in the successful treatment of addiction. It is time to build on the successes of past treatment modalities and expand them to include new findings and insights. There is no doubt that an appreciation of the brain helps us to understand the entire range of human behavior. The expanding appreciation of the contribution of meditation and mindfulness to mental health is increasingly a component of all forms of treatment. In my experience treating those with substance abuse, what has always struck me is how many of my clients have been insecurely attached or felt as if they were unconnected to others long before addiction reared its head. Research in attachment and social neuroscience support Dr. Morgan's belief that disconnection is intolerable for human beings. From deep within our evolutionary past, it signals an extreme threat to survival. We do anything to avoid the dread of separation, from staying in abusive relationships to sacrificing all we have worked for by medicating the terror. We all strive for embeddedness, and when this fails, we look for substitutes, whatever form they may take. The problem with substitutes for love and connection is that there is never enough. Louis Cozzolino, Los Angeles, California, 2019. Preface. Alcohol ruined me financially and morally, broke my heart and the hearts of too many others. Even though it did this to me and it almost killed me, and I haven't touched a drop of it in 17 years, sometimes I wonder if I could get away with drinking some now. I totally subscribe to the notion that alcoholism is a mental illness because thinking like that is clearly insane. Craig Ferguson. Today, I am clean and sober, and I have been for some time, but it wasn't always that way. I have been rescued from myself more than once, pulled out of the pit of addiction and compulsive behavior. As a 12-step sponsor once said to me, "You're a real one." Over the years, I have wondered, both personally and professionally, why these issues are part of my life. Where does my compulsive way of living and the addictions it breeds come from? How did addiction become so embedded in me? These have been tantalizing personal questions in my life ever since I realized that my maternal grandfather and all three of my uncles on both sides of the family died from addiction. Professionally, as a mental health and addiction counselor, as well as a supervisor and professor of counseling, it has been incumbent on me to explore the roots of my own thinking and behavior. Consequently, I was curious about my inclination to excess, but never more so than when I was sitting in detox, disheveled and trying to figure out how I got there. That was over 30 years ago, but seems as fresh as yesterday. Was I destined to follow my ancestors' path and become one more statistic, I wondered? Was addiction eventually going to kill me, too? As I have taught and trained numerous addiction and mental health counselors over the years, I have tried to understand these questions, the intricacies of this disorder, and the circuitous pathways that led me to a mental health career. Understanding is, of course, therapeutic in its own right. It continues to help in my own addiction recovery and search for life balance. It is helping me to be a better parent and spouse. And, I hope, it is helping me to teach and guide a new generation of mental health and addiction counselors. This book is an extension of that work. In the 1980s and 1990s, I consulted about drugs and compulsions with a number of schools and colleges, parent groups, and peer-based prevention programs, as well as participating in panel discussions on campuses and a local PBS station. Looking back, I'm embarrassed at how primitive and narrow our understanding was about it all. In 1990, I came to my university in the midst of writing a doctoral dissertation about the experience of recovery, as narrated to me by a group of long-recovering alcoholics and drug addicts, and I was given control over our state-approved curriculum of alcohol and other drug courses. This launched a career in which I have published over 30 peer-reviewed articles and chapters, as well as 2 books in addiction studies. As a person in long-term recovery myself, I am grateful for these opportunities to make a contribution. As the listener can hear, I have spent many years of my life studying addiction. In all that time, perhaps the deepest insight I have is echoed in the recent words of journalist Johan Hari. The opposite of addiction is not sobriety, its connection. When I first heard it, this phrasing caught me up short. The insight was breathtaking. Nevertheless, the more I study and learn about addiction, the more I believe it to be true. A goal of this book is to lay out why this is so and what it might mean for those of us who struggle on behalf of addicts every day. Connection and a sense of belonging, of community and common purpose, are foundational first principles in human development as well as in recovery, and can serve both as an antidote to and inoculation against addiction. As we confront the current public health crisis of addiction, made more concrete by the ongoing opioid crisis, we need to consider community and connection as essential healing strategies. They can also help us to address a host of other problems that plague our times. The absence of these very same experiences can be the catalyst for a multitude of life struggles. How did I get here? Listening to addiction and mental health professionals, through multiple research interviews with addicts and recovering persons over the years, and through many counseling sessions with them and those who love them, I have tried to learn about addiction. Teaching a variety of students of all ages and varied experiences, I have explored addiction and been humbled. Perhaps you have a similar experience. There have been times when I thought, I've got this. Addiction is a moral weakness, a choice, an inherited vulnerability, a chronic relapsing disorder, a disease. Plug in your favorite theory or approach. And then something happens and I'm no longer sure. Maybe I've come up against someone's unfathomable choice. He did what? Or maybe I've seen again the depths to which someone sinks. Oh no, not that. Maybe a new model emerges with fanfare and the trappings of scientific certainty, and it seems to offer a more complete understanding than what I previously had. Now I get it. Maybe I re-experience the aftershocks of my own addictions, and even though I'm in recovery for many years, I feel the lure of the monster rise again. Something happens, and all of a sudden I'm no longer so sure about my way of thinking. What I thought was certain now seems incomplete and a little off. In recent years, I've had several of these experiences, and they have forced me to look anew at long-held beliefs about addiction and human beings. Studying addiction, after all, brings one face to face with core elements of our shared humanity. As a result, I began a multi-year personal project to examine and, where needed, revise my own view of addiction and recovery. I began this project thinking that I would write a book that integrated different sciences into a synthesis about addiction and the challenges it poses, knitting together clues from attachment theory, neurobiology, family systems, and trauma studies. I discovered some useful and fresh ways of thinking. I learned that a new hybrid and integrative science called interpersonal neurobiology, IPNB, offered the kind of cohesive perspective I was searching for. The discerning listener will hear throughout this book that IPNB does offer a robust and muscular picture of what is happening in addiction. As time went on, however, and I followed the clues that were emerging in my research, my thinking expanded even further, and I began to examine sociological, socioeconomic, and cultural literature on the fragmentation of modern society and the experience of cultural dislocation that inevitably follows. I began to see that there are pockets of poor health, addiction, and economic despair that seem to cluster by geography or zip code. Addiction is not just about individuals or genetics or neurochemistry. I saw a wider ecology of relationships and connections enfolding individuals' addictive experiences. My view of addiction as a symptom and direct result of larger social and cultural forces began to envelop equally valid insights into the neurobiological, attachment, and trauma-related factors that also lead to harmful and addictive use. These domains mutually trigger and reinforce one another. Earlier insights nested within this more expansive framework. A new way of conceptualizing addiction and the tasks of recovery slowly dawned on me. I offer this framework next as a fresh way to understand addiction and address the current addiction crisis. The framework integrates interpersonal neurobiology and what I call social ecology. Some provocative learning experiences are presented within the book as case studies and as personal life events. These experiences were triggers for my own project and were pivotal for my personal re-examination. The case studies inside are all true and accurate as best I could recreate them. Some are from memory, while others are recounted from my clinical notes. Naturally, the names and details are changed and identities disguised to protect the privacy and anonymity of former clients. Where necessary, I use specific details with permission, and sometimes several cases are merged to enrich the description. The fundamentals of these stories, however, are authentic and revealing. Personal stories are also told from memory, as I believe they happened, and contain recollections from family members who were there. These presentations are similar to the way I teach, using illustrative materials from counseling practice or my own life as ways to explain or further a point. Why this book? The focus of this book will be addiction and recovery. I have found interpersonal neurobiology, IPNB, and social ecology, SE, to be twin perspectives that can assist in deeper understanding. Like the dual lenses in a pair of binoculars, when aligned together, these two frames of reference can help us to see farther and with clarity. These perspectives come together in an approach to counseling that I call attachment-sensitive counseling. The outline of this approach is presented inside. Sitting quietly at home one day, I realized that I wanted to share what I was learning with the colleagues, young professionals, and supervisees I had taught and written for over the course of my career. So much new information is emerging, much of it developed in my lifetime, and it begs for a synthesis. New insights across disciplines are coming together. They complement and deepen some of what we already know and replace some of it too. Working across disciplines and finding common ground between divergent viewpoints is now a method of scientific inquiry in its own right and has given us exciting new ways to imagine the world and how things work. This way of thinking, called consilience, opens new pathways forward. A consilient approach attempts to see a seamless web of causes and effects, pulling together several sciences and even humanities into a multifocal and unified view. Emphasis is placed on the connections of ideas and disciplines. With this kind of thinking, providers and scholars can feel the approach of a new model or paradigm within multiple fields of inquiry, including addiction studies, once we are willing to open the limits and boundaries of our thinking and look across different areas of knowledge. Fresh insights have the power to expand and revitalize what we know and how we practice. I want to share these new ideas with you. Others, such as struggling clients, their loved ones, and the public, may benefit as well. Throughout the book, I present what we are learning about human development, addiction, recovery, and social ecology from a variety of viewpoints. Attachment, neurobiology, family systems, as well as trauma and adversity, interact from the very beginning and throughout our lives. They create the conditions internal to the individual and surrounding the person, which can lead to addiction, as well as many other conditions that bedevil human living and public health. From this perspective, addiction is not so much an individual misfortune as it is a result and a symptom of larger conditions. Those struggling with substance-related and addictive disorders may be harbingers of deeper social dangers. I have come to the conclusion that addiction studies may benefit from such a new, integrated, and consilient paradigm and new metaphors that can better express what science and experience try to teach us about addiction and recovery. The perspective offered by interpersonal neurobiology, augmented with social ecological perspectives, will guide us. Welcome aboard. Introduction. Addiction is a primary chronic disease of brain reward, motivation, memory, and related circuitry. Dysfunction in these circuits leads to characteristic biological, psychological, social, and spiritual manifestations. This is reflected in an individual pathologically pursuing reward and/or relief by substance use and other behaviors. American Society of Addiction Medicine. The idea that addiction is a disease is the greatest medical hoax since the idea that masturbation would make you go blind. This is not to say that the behaviors people now fashionably regard as symptoms of addiction are non-existent. Calling human pursuits diseases tells us more about the diagnostician than it does about the persons being diagnosed. Jeffrey Shaler. There has always been some controversy in the field of addiction studies, but more recently discussions have become quite polarized, often generating more heat than light. On one side, we have those who advocate for the position that addiction is an acquired, chronic, relapsing disease of a hijacked brain. Advocates tell us that under the impact of drugs or compulsive behaviors such as gambling or internet gaming, personal choice is limited in vulnerable individuals. Drug use and behavioral actions become compulsions and are not under conscious control. Psychoactive drugs and compulsive behaviors mixed with vulnerabilities in individuals are the culprits here. There is much to recommend this view. Clearly, alcohol, nicotine, and other drugs, as well as compulsive behaviors, have psychoactive effects. On its face, addiction involves the brain, a chronic course, relapse, and a process that resembles abduction. The labeling of addiction as a disease relieves some of the shame and stigma felt by addicts, but it also raises a number of thorny and troubling issues. This is the current and dominant model of addiction espoused by many of our most respected addiction scientists, treatment professionals, and scholars. It is the view that guides much of our public policy and research funding. Many in the media and pop culture champion this model. But the common man or woman finds it difficult to accept at face value. On the other side is a chorus of respected scholars, treatment providers, and advocates for an opposing and vocal minority view, namely that addiction is a choice and not a disease. It is voluntary behavior akin to adopting a religious belief system or falling in love, but more harmful, a willful dedication and commitment that leads to self-destruction. This view is directly opposed to any analysis of addiction's compulsiveness that excludes an individual's sovereign choice to use. People are held accountable. This view also tends to be hostile to any kind of mutual help or 12-step engagement. Empowering the self is its mantra, not powerlessness or reliance on higher powers. This makes it controversial in addiction treatment circles that, more often than not, have some loyalty to Alcoholics Anonymous and related programs. More recently, a new perspective has emerged that builds on elements of the choice model, but underlines addiction as a learned behavior. The advocates of this model emphasize that the brain is changing all the time, adapting to the living world and altering itself as circumstances demand. Neuroplasticity is highlighted, and adaptive learning is understood to involve motivation, desire, and repetition, as well as reward, mechanisms that become routinized and stable over time. An impulsive search for pleasure or relief, liking, is replaced, so the model goes, by a continuing and compulsive repetition of increasingly automated learned behavior, wanting, that is difficult to relinquish. Disease choice, learning. There is some truth in each point of view. However, what is striking in all these depictions of addiction is the singular attachment to individualized representations of the human person. Disease, choice, and learning are primarily conditions of the individual and, by extension, his or her near relationships such as family, kinship, or close friendship networks. And yet, any view of human persons that ignores our essentially social, systemic, and thoroughly embedded nature, that is, our deep ties to diverse connections and social ecologies, can only be a partial picture of reality. I have become weary of the back and forth, frustrated by our limited vision, and I believe that I have found another way. There is more consensus than we know or are willing to admit, and we need to move beyond sterile debates to focus on a more comprehensive paradigm. This book attempts to meet that need. It, A, incorporates the newest information and the latest science. B, provides scaffolding for what is already known and helps to integrate new knowledge. C, provides fresh methods and perspectives for helping persons struggling with addiction and other chronic illnesses. And D, fosters hope for the task of recovery and mental health care. Do we really need another book, another model of addiction? This is not just another approach, something new and unconventional. Taking the best insights of our biological and social sciences and integrating those ideas with leading-edge work in attachment, trauma, and systems thinking, the book provides a new and more comprehensive synthesis. I fold previous models into a wider frame by placing the biological sciences, disease, neurobiology, and social psychology, choice, learning, of addiction, within the wider perspective of interpersonal neurobiology, while embedding it within a broader human ecology. This perspective allows us to see the true worth of previous models and appreciate the unique contributions of each. Combining insights and methods across disciplines, a new synthesis is emerging in other areas of investigation, such as the mental health and trauma recovery movements. This book presents a similar, consilient model of addiction. Competing models. I am increasingly uncomfortable with the guiding metaphors of the disease model of addiction, defined as a chronic relapsing disease of a brain that has been hijacked by the use of substances and compulsive behaviors. The term disease speaks to an understanding and interventions that emerge from a one-sided medical model, while hijacking has criminal justice implications and places the responsibility for addiction in the wrong place, namely on the drugs or activities themselves. Addiction, however, is not a criminal or even a medical problem only, and while it would be a mistake to disregard the growing evidence that is emerging from neuroscience and biomedicine about the role of the broken brain in addiction, neurobiology cannot be the whole story. Why? Contrary to popular belief, every single day some people who struggle with the disease of addiction wake up and say, "That's it." In the parlance of Alcoholics Anonymous, they arrive at that point where they are sick and tired of being sick and tired. They reach a moment of clarity. This is a challenge for the medical disease model. How does a truly hijacked brain make this choice? Addicts do not act like automata. They do retain some control. Neuroscientist Kent Berridge of the University of Michigan writes, "Addictive urges are not entirely uncontrollable. They can be controlled, at least for a short while, and sometimes for longer if the stakes are high enough and clear enough." We have, in fact, known this for a long time. People struggling with addiction often find a pathway out. Newly awakened addicts do follow through with the initial decision to stop. This happens a lot more often than the prevailing.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?